Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Real Estate Disruptors. Today, we've got Austin Rutherford with Elevate Life. He flew in from Columbus, Ohio to talk about how he's done a million plus in each of the last 3 years and the importance of building a business around your lifestyle. If this is your first time tuning in, I am Steve Trang, sales trainer for some of the top wholesalers in the country, and I'm on a mission to create 100 millionaires. A question I get all the time is how to become one of the 100 millionaires. The information on this podcast alone is enough to help you become a millionaire in the next 5 to 7 years. All you need to do is just take consistent action. You will become one. When you hear a nugget, please type into the comment section after the show, identify your single biggest takeaway, and focus on only that for the next 7 days. If you get value today, please tag a friend below. Share this episode right now. That way we can all grow together. And this is a live show, so please ask your questions for Austin to answer. You ready?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So first question is, what got you into real estate?
Yeah. So my first dream was to be an NBA basketball player.
That
didn't work out. So after high school, I went out to Arizona to play basketball for a year. But it got to, like, basketball is how I treat business now. I was in it all day, every day. You know, I was trying to grow as much as possible, work as much as possible. But it got to the point where I hated touching the rock. And, you know, for me in my life, that was my life. So when I started hating basketball, like, I felt lost in my life. You know, maybe, you know, somebody gets laid off, somebody loses a job, like, you don't know what to do. That's where I was at. And it, like, there was a lot of tears and everything. And I don't know who gave me the book, but the book Think and Grow Rich was given to me when I was 19 years old. And then I read that.
That's really fortunate.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. And I read that and it opened up my mind to the possibilities of actually making money in business as an entrepreneur. The next thing I read, I don't know if it's true or not, but it said 90% of all people who file a tax return with $1 million or more on it had real estate in their portfolio. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, you know, basketball didn't work out, so Let's try real estate.
I love that line.
Yeah.
But I can't find that actually stated anywhere. But it's a great line.
I agree. I don't know if it's true, but it worked for me.
Yeah, I went digging for a while, like one night, and I can't find where that was sourced.
You tried to look for it?
I tried to look for it. But anyway, let's talk about basketball. Yeah. So what was the basketball dream?
It was to be in the NBA. You know, when I sophomore, eighth grade is when it all started. You know, I never played basketball up until then. And the dream was just to go to the league. I don't know if it was like for money or desire or.
Were you in Ohio?
I was, yeah.
So you're a Cavaliers fan?
I am. Oh, and
so
I was.
Like Craig Elo? Like who was the stud back then?
I don't even know back then.
No. Oh.
You know, I remember when LeBron started.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you're a lot younger. Man. Got it. Okay. So basketball was the dream. Didn't pan out.
Nope.
Moved to Arizona.
Nope.
Think and Grow Rich.
Nope.
And then what happened?
I don't know why. I hated reading books. I never worked on myself before that. But for whatever reason, I started reading books and I started journaling. I'm a big proponent in journaling. I try to do it every day, even today. So I was sitting up on my rooftop. We had a condo, the whole team that was staying in it. And I was just journaling about life. And I ended up looking across the backyard and there was like a 10 or 15 unit apartment building back there. I was like, man, you know, if some guy owns that building and he's got 10 or 15 people paying him rent, I knew nothing about numbers, if it was a good deal or a bad deal. But I was like, he's got to be making money if 15 people are paying him. Mm-hmm. And then that's what triggered real estate. And then I just started buying like every like book, every small course I could find, anything that like could get mailed to me to learn. And, you know, fell in love with passive residual income and then bought my first house when I was 20 after I moved back to Columbus.
In Columbus.
Yep.
So, you know, looking at this, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up in Arizona, like home ownership is just normal, right?
Yeah.
Like you go get a job and you buy a home. I lived in California for a bit. And over there, it's like, maybe you can buy a home.
Yeah.
But you also resign to like, that's for rich people.
Yep.
In Ohio, I learned later on, it's kind of crazy. It's just normal to rent.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to me?
I grew up in a household where my parents owned the home. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't understand it, but I mean, people are just used to renting over there.
But like the whole Midwest is just.
It's a great, I think maybe too, it's a great place for like cash flow wise. So a lot of landlords from all over the country own there.
For investors.
Yeah.
And that's why they're going there.
Yep.
But why is home ownership like not a thing there in the Midwest? Because it's cheaper to own than it is
100%
to rent.
100%. I think this goes back to education, to high school and college. You know, it's something that they don't teach anywhere in the country, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But people don't understand money. They don't understand, you know, debt. They don't understand finances. And, you know, people don't know that it might be cheaper. A lot of people don't know that it's cheaper to rent than cheaper to own than it is to rent.
Got it.
I don't know. I don't know why, though.
So you think it's just insufficient financial literacy, like up and down the.
I think so.
I mean, that's what obviously that's what's happening. I just know if that's like the main reason. It's just their whole lives, like, you know, your generation before you.
Yep.
And that's the reason why appreciation is a challenge.
Yep.
But man, those yields are amazing.
Agreed. I mean, I know people that have lived in a rental property for 20 years, and they've paid rent for 20 years in a row. you could own the house free and clear at this point.
I had a property we bought during the recession because we were afraid we were losing our house to foreclosure, so we bought another property as kind of a, like a backup plan. And we were able to do a little mod in our house. And that lady lived in our property, mm-hmm. and in the course of 10 years, paid our entire mortgage. Like, like our house was free and clear from all the rent she paid over 10 years.
Yep.
It's...
But people just don't understand it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
So, all right. So 20 years old, you buy your first rental property?
Yeah, duplex. Right.
So talk about that. What was that process like?
Yeah, so fell in love with the idea of passive residual income. And, you know, I wanted rental properties. I wanted passive income. And I didn't know what to do. I had no idea how to evaluate rental properties. So again, I just tried to learn as much as possible.
At 20 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually moved home, I think when I was 19, and got a valet job back at home just to try and make some money. And then, you know, started diving into real estate, trying to understand like what was a good rental property, how I made money on cash flow. Like there was a podium on my valet where like you'd like scan tickets and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like everybody would be out running cars and I'd be in there like looking up like duplexes and rental properties and putting my cash flow calculator together. And, you know, looking back, shout out to them for not, you know, pulling me away. But did that for like a year and then started actually going out and looking at houses with the realtor. And like I built my own like spreadsheet, you know, the PITI and then the rental profit, the amount of like monthly rental income. And, you know, ended up finding a property where the net was about like $1,200 a month on it. And it was a duplex. One side paid for more than the mortgage. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, let's do it. So,
and was this a situation where you were house hacking or this was just a straight up rental property?
I didn't even know about house hacking then. I wish I did. Yeah. I absolutely would have done it. But I ended up putting like 20-25% down on mm-hmm. the property. You know, I wish I'd have known house hacking because it's only like 3.5%.
Right. Okay. So was this all through books or was it other places too?
It was like books and like you can, I don't even know what they are, if they have them nowadays, but you can order like binders of mm-hmm. like information. So I read those too, but it was, I didn't even know what YouTube was back then. I didn't even know what podcasts were back then. It was just like literally ordering $10, $20, $50 mm-hmm. like pamphlet things and just learning as much as possible.
Was BiggerPockets around then?
I didn't know about it. Yeah. It might've been.
All right. So you buy your first duplex.
Yep.
Smooth sailing, or were there challenges becoming a first-time landlord?
It wasn't too bad. Like the property was fully renovated when I bought it. It had yearly tenants in place. They were all month to month. So when I bought it, I increased rents like, I don't know, 50 or 100 bucks a side. The only issue was it had not been tube wiring in it. It's the only thing they didn't update. Mm-hmm. So on the remedy request, we asked them to update it and they did. But outside of that, like it was pretty smooth. And then I self-managed at the time. Mm-hmm. And you know, everyone hears the story, like you get the call at midnight. It was Super Bowl weekend, that night of the game, and I got the phone call that the furnace went out. And you know, in Ohio, it's cold. You can't just like ignore that phone call. So me and my dad, I called my dad. I was like, hey, dad, we got to go fix this furnace. And drove down there. And after that, I was like, I'd never want to be a landlord. I'd never want to personally manage the properties. So, you know, besides that, it wasn't too terribly bad though.
Right. And then what was the next deal?
The next deal. So when I put that money down, like back in before that, just in like high school and middle school and stuff, I would cut grass, I would shovel driveways, I'd flip candy, I'd make Buckeye necklaces, which is an Ohio thing, and then sell them at the football games. So I had a bunch of money saved up, which is how I used for the down payment on
so
the property.
So you were a hustler before?
Trying to, yeah. Yeah. Get it by any. I actually got in trouble because they thought I was slinging dope in high school, mm-hmm. but I was selling like gum and like Sour Patch Kids out my backpack. Started doing that and I lost my train of thought.
Well, talking about buying that second property.
Yeah. So I was broke after I put the down payment on the rental property. I had $0. So I was like, all right, I got to make money faster. And my real estate agent at the time made like $8,000 commission on the house. And I was like, all right, well, like, let me try and get my real estate license. So I went out, took the classes, got licensed. I did like the speed classes. It took me like 2 weeks to take the classes. Mm-hmm. Got licensed, sold like two houses, hated it. You know, people driving people around, showing them houses. It's just not a fun experience for me personally. So I started looking into other ways of making money.
Yeah.
Heard a radio show. I was like, hey, if you want to learn how to flip houses and become a millionaire, you know, come to this free seminar. Went to the seminar, invested into a mentor program, education program.
How much was that?
$25,000.
And at the time, you didn't have $25,000.
No, not at all. So
how did that work?
It was a three-day seminar. Day two, they're like, hey, we got this program. You need $25,000, but you got to have it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I had like a few grand at the time. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be tough. So I went home and I applied for American Express credit card. Mm-hmm. I told them I made $100,000 a year. And I told them I had an 800 credit score, roughly, give or take a zero. And they approved me for a line of credit on the credit card. So I maxed the credit card out. Mm-hmm. But I was still like $5,000, $10,000 short at the time to make the $25,000 payment. I was 21 years old. And like for me, it was that moment in life where like I knew it was what I needed to do, but like I couldn't do it because I didn't have the money. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was still living with my parents, and like I asked my parents for the money to loan me the money. I, you know, asked my uncle for the money. Like I asked anybody I could think of to try and get the money, and everyone's like, no, you know, it's too good to be true. You know, they're not just going to teach you to be a millionaire. You know, that's the sales pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, just work hard, right? And so my parents ended. I was living with my parents. They ended up going to sleep. And I literally, legitimately crawled under my dining room, my parents' dining room table, and started crying. And it wasn't just crying, it was like bawling, because my parents ended up waking up because I was crying so hard. And they came downstairs and they, like, I don't know, they realized that I was serious about it. You mm-hmm. know, they've seen that I've hustled in the past and made money. And they ended up fronting me the other part of the money.
Wow.
To get into the mentor program. So yeah. The next day, I got goosebumps just telling it.
Yeah.
But next day, walked in, swiped my credit card, maxed it out, 18 months, no interest, mm-hmm. and thought I was going to get rich in a month. But that doesn't always happen like that.
It's not as easy as it looks.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether on social media.
Yeah.
Or on the stage.
100%.
Okay, so then what happened next?
So I swiped the card. I had 18 months no interest. And so I was like, all right, I got to pay it off in 18 months. So, you know, I started sending marketing. You know, they taught us like direct mail, like probates, foreclosures. There wasn't cold calling or RVM or SMS, or at least I didn't know about it back mm-hmm. then. I only knew about really direct mail. So I found out like how to pull lists from the county recorder's website, the probates, the divorces, the foreclosures, and the tax liens. So I did that every week. So I had new data, started sending them out. Back then, probate was a tremendous thing because nobody did that. You know, yeah. A lot of people do it now. So got a bunch of deals from that, but not quickly. And then I was still valeting cars. So still working like 50, 60 hours a week.
Still hustling.
Yep. I promised my mother I'd get my college degree. So I was going to college taking 15 hours.
Was that a condition of the loan?
Probably was.
Yeah. All right.
I just grew up like go to school, get a degree, go to work, you know. So yeah. I just promised her I'd get my degree. So I was going to college taking 15 credit hours. I was still a realtor at the time trying to sell houses. Didn't work. And I was trying to start the real estate investment company. So I'd go to work from 7 to 3. And then most days I'd have college at night. I would write letters in my parents' basement till 1, 2, 3 in the morning, hand-addressed envelopes to get people to try and sell me the house, mm-hmm. go to sleep like midnight, 1, 2 o'clock, wake up at 6 a.m. the next day, go to work. Like I was putting in 18, 20-hour days like clockwork. There was a time I got off work at 3 o'clock. I was driving home, and I literally fell asleep at the wheel. And the only way that I woke up is because I hit the curb, and I was on the sidewalk, and there's a light pole in front of me. Thank God I woke up, went back on the street, drove home, started writing handwritten letters to send out to sellers. So like to me, it was like get it by any means. Like I had a debt that I had to pay off, mm-hmm. and like I was going to make it happen. So 10 months into that process of doing that every day for 10 months.
So zero up until this point.
Zero, literally nothing. You know, I had the debt of the mortgage. I maxed out my credit cards. Like I was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And there was like at times $100 in my bank account. And finally, you know, a seller called me from a probate mailer. It was the fifth postcard I sent to them. They called me. They're like, hey, you know, my mom passed. Got this house I'm looking to sell. It was like seven siblings with, you know, wives and husbands. And in the state of Ohio, there's dower laws. Mm-hmm. So all the wives and husbands need to sign off on the contract as well. So that was a nightmare just getting it in contract. But put in contract for, I think, $102,000 contingent on the foundation inspection. And the foundation went through. It was terrible. It was like $28,000 to fix it. So got it reduced to $74,000. And, you know, at the time, I've never raised private money in my life. So trying to figure that out. It was $170,000 rehab. So it was $250,000 raise. And, luckily figured it out. Got a private money lender to fund the entire deal. Mm-hmm. And flipped it, sold it, made $103,000 net profit 6 months later. So 16 months from swiping the credit card mm-hmm. to actually making money, 16-month process, sold it, took that money, reinvested it, and just built it from there.
Paid off your debt.
100%.
Yeah. So you were 22.
Yeah.
What year was this?
2015.
Okay. So I want to hit a couple of points here because I am uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Right, with some of these other programs out there, yep. they charge $25,000. Mm-hmm. You know, but they exist.
Yep.
There's two things here. First, you had conviction.
Yep.
This was going to happen.
100%.
This is your destiny.
Yep.
This is why you know this opportunity was presented to you.
Yep.
And you made it happen.
Yep.
What gave you that conviction?
It's just the want, like the desire, the will to win. You know, people talk about like they have it. Like, what is that it? Nobody mm-hmm. knows what that it is, but people have it. Some people have it and some people don't. Mm-hmm. I'm a competitor. You know, I love to win. I love to make money. You know, my why then was to get rich and go on the vacations and have the cars and the Rolexes and all those things. And, I was just willing to get it by any means.
Yeah.
I know I'll outwork anybody. If it right. really comes down to it, like, well, I'll put in more work.
I mean, clearly, you're falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, right? A little bit too much.
The other reason why I brought this up was that, you know, you not only maxed out your credit card, you got a new credit card just to max out.
100%.
And again, you know, we frown upon this industry that encourages people to sign up for credit cards and max them out. But here yeah. you are, right?
Doing it.
And I didn't do that, but I certainly maxed out my credit cards.
Yeah.
You know, I think when Chase called my credit card dude, like, hey, by the way, we're going to shut down your credit card. I think it was $39,000, you know, in credit card debt.
Running it up.
Right. I was running it up. And that was how I was running payroll. That's how I was paying for everything.
Yep.
And so, like, we always tell people, you know, be cautious, be careful, whatever. Well, not be cautious, be careful, but, like, don't swipe for this $25,000 program.
Yeah.
But who am I to say that if I'm the kind of person
that did it
with that conviction that will, you know, the best way to motivate me and possibly you too is tell me I can't do it.
100%.
Right. And then it's watch me.
Yep.
So, all right. So you got that big deal, clear six figures.
Yep.
Pay off your parents, pay off American Express.
Yep.
Then what happens?
So people don't believe me when I say this, but I literally didn't spend a penny. I didn't go out to eat. I didn't buy a pair of sneakers. I didn't go on a vacation, like nothing. Put it all back into the business, went back to school, and went back to my job the next day. Still valeting cars, $100,000 at the age of 22 years old. More money than like I've ever seen, anybody that I've ever known has ever seen. Mm-hmm. But I went back to work, right? Because I know one deal isn't going to change your life. Like one deal doesn't do anything for me.
Well, and also you took 10 months, was it 10 months? 16 months to close that one.
Yep.
And so I think there's also a curse because some of these guys have instant success, right? Yep. Like, you know, check out this texting platform or this or that. And like most people struggle for a long time
yep.
and unfortunately quit. But you have a couple guys that will first month close their first deal.
Yeah, one marketing campaign.
Yeah, and they'll clear $60,000. And then they're kind of like, oh, this is easy.
Yep.
And because they think it's easy, they may not appreciate it as much, whereas you are like savoring.
Yeah, for real. It took a long time.
Yeah. All right, so you went back to work. Didn't go crazy with it. What happened after that?
Yeah, so kept marketing, kept going to work, kept, you know, going to college. And I think like 2 months later, I got the next deal from Direct Mail. Her husband passed away. She moved in with her daughter, and the house was vacant. It was full of all types of stuff. The landscaping package was like $15,000, and it wasn't like to make it nice. It was just to clear the brush. So it was completely overgrown and ended up the contractor that did that job was two doors down from the first house I did. He was renovating another house. So I just went in there. I was like, hey, my name's Austin. What's your name? Like, you do work for other people. So networking is huge in this business too. But he ended up doing that next house, bought it, used private money to do it. Took like 30, 45 days to renovate it, sell it. 3 months later, made another like $40,000-ish. So I was almost $150,000 in profit in that period of about 4 months, minus the other 16 months on top of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this is it. Mm-hmm.
So now it's real.
Yeah. I was like, all right, this is cool. And I had the next deal in contract.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, like, it's working now.
All right.
So I went home. I was like, hey, Ma, like, you're never going to see me graduate. I'm done with college. And I was still living with them at the time. So they understood it. They saw the work, the money that was coming in. They're like, I wouldn't expect anything different. Mm-hmm. Went into work the next day. I was like, hey, I'm done. I ain't coming back.
Yeah.
And just went all in on real estate.
Got it. All right. So you slammed it on a couple of flips, but you're really more a buy and hold guy.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that transition.
For sure. So I wanted to get into real estate because of passive residual income. But then you start making money and people lose track of buying rental properties. Because the thing with rental properties is you don't make money today. Mm-hmm. You make money long term. So I lost vision of that for a little bit. I was just chasing the money, you know, putting up multiple six figures a month and wholesales and flips and making great money doing it. But it's like, all right, it's always chasing that next deal.
Great active income. 100%.
Very active income. And, you know, honestly, so I had like 25 units or so up to about 14, 15 months ago. And then a buddy of mine, he's got a couple hundred units. And like, I was crushing it at the beginning money wise. And he was like eating crap because you don't make much money on rentals. And then I saw a switch. He's like, yeah, I just did a refi of like 30 properties. I paid off 15 of them. I refied the other 15 and I got an $800,000 check, no tax. I was like, all right, rentals is the way.
Tax-free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just kind of went all in on rentals over the last like 12 to 16 months.
Got it.
Got almost 70 units now. And that's our first exit strategy is just keep stacking the rental properties.
Yeah, that was something that the first time I heard about this was that you can do a cash out refi and just take all that money out tax-free.
Yeah.
And it's not income.
Yep.
It's equity.
Yep.
So there's no reason to get taxed on it.
Yeah.
But the idea that you can have $800,000 right here and not have to pay Uncle Sam a dime.
Seriously, that's 1.2 in the real world.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an amazing concept. Okay, so you saw this, your world got flipped inside out.
Yep.
So you said it was 2 years ago?
About, yeah.
Okay. So then what, you just started keeping everything or what happened next?
Everything. So like our
first— So you just stopped wholesaling, stopped flipping?
For the most part. Like we still do a little for deals that don't fit. Mm-hmm. But like when I started, it was just rehabbing. That's all I knew. I didn't know about wholesaling. I didn't really know much about rental properties. And then I saw an opportunity to start doing new construction in my city. There was a neighborhood that was getting developed. There was a bunch of rehabs, no new construction. So I took the profits, bought a whole bunch of land, made a bunch of money on new construction, bought a couple rentals like every now and then. And then got introduced to wholesaling. So started wholesaling more instead of doing these $150,000 rehab projects. So then got to wholesaling, bought a couple rental properties. But now our first option is to keep it as a rental property. So when deals come in, we evaluate rental properties. We're looking to burr it with no money out of pocket and at least $400 a month in profit per door before like vacancies and repairs and things like that. And if it hits those numbers, we're keeping it as a rental, no questions asked. If it doesn't hit those numbers, if the rehab's less than 50 grand, we can get in and out of those in about 30 days. We're going to buy it and rehab it and flip it. If it's more than 50 grand, we're going to wholesale it.
Got it. Okay, so let's talk about transactions count right now. Well, so before you did this transition, what were you doing volume-wise?
So at the beginning, when I was like just doing flips and stuff, I would do like 2 to 4 flips a month, but like we were popping 50 to 80 grand of profit on each. So especially the new builds, we were doing six figures on the new builds, which is great. And then we got like kind of into the wholesale model and scaled, you know, sales team and dispositions team and, you know, all that stuff. We were doing like 10-ish a month. And now like, you know, it's came down a little bit. Just I feel like people scale chaos sometimes. They scale something that they don't actually want. So I'm very conscious of like my goals and how I want my lifestyle to look like. So now we're doing like 2 to 5 a month. But it's very, very limited overhead with those.
And then your involvement with our friend Carlos was probably instrumental in some way.
For sure. So that's when I got put onto wholesaling.
Got it.
You know, all my deals up till then was from direct mail and driving for dollars. Mm-hmm. That was it. I didn't know about cold calling or RVM or SMS or any of that stuff or list buying. Like I didn't know any of that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like what put me onto the wholesaling thing. And I just blew up the marketing, you know, scaled the team and made a lot of money. But again, it's not what I personally wanted at that time in my life.
Right. So obviously having a friend that's having a lot of success,
for sure,
buy and hold certainly helps. But even then, what kind of help you focus on lifestyle? Because we all get started for the same reason, right? We all get started because we want to make a lot of money really fast.
Yep.
And have time and financial freedom.
Yep.
But then once we get started, that thing about making a lot of money is really shiny.
Yep.
And that part about the reasons you started kind of start 100%. Getting a little dark. How did you remember to keep your eyes, you know, on why you started?
For sure. You hit the nail on the head. People start something for a reason and then lose sight of it.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to get out of that. And I was stuck in it for years. You know, I was work all day, every day, like no friendships, no relationships, like just work and make money. But, you know, I think mentors are huge. The people around you that force you to do the right thing, even when it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So one of my mentors, like he always like pushed me to like, you know, get out uncomfortable and spend money on myself. And I think part of it too is like burnout. You know, I got to a point where I was like, man, like I don't know if real estate's really it. You know, this is a lot of work. But I think it's from burning out, from working nonstop all day, every day. So with those two things combined, you know, they pushed me to buy a nice car. That was a Jag. It was a $30,000 Jaguar. I was literally driving to the dealership to buy it, and I called my mentor and I was like, I feel like I don't deserve this. Like I feel guilty for buying it, and I could afford a $30,000 Jaguar, right? And he was like, bro, go buy the car. Like, that's what you work for. Go buy the car. And the cool thing is once you buy the car, it'll pay for itself 100 times over because it'll create conversation. It'll put you into rooms that you weren't able to get into before. And it'll make you grow mentally. So when he said that, I was like, all right, well, like I can have nice things and make money. You know, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
So started doing that, you know, started traveling more. I love the lifestyle side. Like people... And it's the question, like, you know, how much money do you want to make versus how do you want your life to look like? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm still trying to find that perfect balance. I don't know if you'll ever find it, but I'm, you know, I love to travel.
Was that Mark Evans that was pushing you that way?
Yep.
Yeah. If you're listening, Mark, waiting for you here. I was actually texting him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So the lifestyle then is the focus. So talk about that because, I mean, you said you're 27.
Yep.
Right. Unusually young to have this kind of like perspective. It took me, I think I was like 35 when I finally figured this out. I was like, oh, you build a business around your lifestyle.
Yep.
Right? So talk about that mindset and talk about how you execute that.
Again, I think it's a lot of, you know, going back to mentors. You know, Mark kept telling me, he was like, people build a business and then build the lifestyle around it.
Right.
Same thing you just said. You need to build a life and then build a business around it. Mm-hmm. So just being very conscious of that. And like, so I'm moving to Florida next month. Like I'm moving away from my hometown to go to Florida. I was thinking about doing this for years, but I was like, no, I gotta be in Columbus. That's where the business is at. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to be there or stuff isn't gonna get done. And it's consciously just thinking and getting out of your own way. I think one of the biggest blessings is traveling. So we do like vacation masterminds, people fly in and people are like nervous, like I can't leave my business for 5 days. But when you leave your business, you realize what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You remove yourself from the equation, and we go on like a yacht trip one of the days. Like you don't have cell service, so you physically like have to remove yourself, and it's like very eye opening to watch people go through. It was for me when I first did it.
Yeah,
it's like, man, like I'm not the guy that solves every problem. Like somebody else has to. You got to call somebody, and be like, yo, I'm not going to be in today. If something happens, like you got to handle it. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, if you can do that one day, why can't you do that every day?
Yeah.
So just being very conscious of my thought process and forcing myself to travel to put better systems and people and processes in place.
So travel. If you'll travel, you'll find what's broken in your business.
Yes.
And then you can fix it.
100%. But people are too scared to travel.
Yeah. Well, if you don't have a business where you can walk away for a couple of days, you don't have a business, right? And so like, you know, you're in masterminds, I'm in masterminds, I've been in some other crazy masterminds, and it's always fascinating to me when you're at a mastermind, when the guy's always walking in and out of the room.
Phone calls.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? Because it's like, if you're always walking out of the room, then either you don't trust your people, or you don't have the right people.
100%.
Like it's one of those two things.
Yep.
And it sucks. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine living that life.
I've been there. I've been the guy going in and out of the door, and I hated it.
Yeah. It's tough. So another thing that's interesting is I've been following you on TikTok. You're everywhere. Yep. You're always on my for you thing, right? Why are you on TikTok?
Man, you know, we were talking about this before this, but social media eyeballs is the future. Mm-hmm. If you can impact people, help people, you know, have people love, you know, love you, respect you, want to be like you, want to support you, whatever it is. I truly believe, like, when people ask, like, what's your net worth, it doesn't work like this, but it's going in that direction. Eyeballs, followers, mm-hmm. is a portion of your net worth now.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, you can help more people, you can make more money with the more influence that you have. So, you know, a little over a year and a half ago, I just went all in on social media.
Yeah.
And TikTok is one of the only platforms where you can get, like, really, really good organic reach and get in front of more people. So we're on TikTok.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because Gary Vee's been saying it for many, many years.
Yep.
You know, attention is currency.
Yep.
And he's been telling us for many years, like, get on TikTok, get on TikTok, get on TikTok. And we're like, whatever.
Yep. It's a kid thing.
Right? It's like, you know, like, you got that coach that you kind of stopped listening to. Like, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, he did really well. And then for a while, like, the players stopped listening to him, you know?
Yep.
I think Gary Vee's been right many, many times. Like, is he really right about this TikTok thing?
Yep.
And then you see it now. It's like, God, I missed out on it.
100%.
You know, so, and not that I missed out on it, but, like, it was definitely a lot easier.
Oh, for sure.
A few months ago.
I had a buddy that, so, told me to start it. I created an account. I made, mm-hmm. like, one post, and I was like, forget that. Mm-hmm. And my buddy told me to do it. And then that same buddy, like, 4 months later, he was like, yo, like, you really got to get on it. I got 150,000 followers. He does personal training, online personal training. He's like, my business has, like, 3X, because mm-hmm. he talks about, like, nutrition and stuff. He's like, you really got to do this. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll do it. And then the first video I did, it was like how I became a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And you just like point on beat type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, bought a house at 19, 20, you know, flipping first house, 22, blah, 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 blah. And it went viral. It had like 400,000 views on it and like got tens of thousands of followers, hundreds of comments. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, like this is it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's, but the other thing with social media too, that video, how I became a millionaire, people are scared of what other people think, right? Mm-hmm. That's why they don't post on social media. I started going through the comments, feeling good, right? I was like, yeah, man, like let's look what people are saying.
Comments.
And it was like, how you became a millionaire? You sold your hair, right? And it was like 30 comments of like me going bald, right? And I read the first two. I was like, oh man. Like,
it stings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I kept reading. I was like, man, fuck them. Like, I'm going to do me. Like, y'all do whatever y'all want to do.
Yeah.
So you just can't care what other people say.
I mean, I've had stuff when they're talking about like buying time,
yeah,
and buying time by like not eating,
yeah,
you know, fasting.
Yep.
If you fast, you have more time and more money. Yep. And they're like, you know, someone with those cheeks should not be giving comments about fasting. Like, God, that was unnecessary.
100%. And it's nonstop. And the more you're out there, the more you get.
Yeah, the more you get.
Yeah.
And it's funny you're talking about like the first one was the pointy thing because I was talking to Khan. I was like, Khan, like, I need some tips.
Yep.
Like, Kong Lee, you know, you're crushing it. This is when he just hit like a little past a million, right? Yep. He's like 2.4 or something crazy now.
Jeez, going right? crazy.
But I was like, you know, kind of like, what do I got to do to grow TikTok? It's like, and his response, can you point?
It's literally that simple. We overcomplicated it. It's literally point on beat 6 times and write a couple words.
Yeah, it's nuts. All right, so then what's the purpose though? Like, so you're able to influence people. Mm-hmm. You can demonstrate, show them what you're doing.
Yep.
Got it. And then... you know, Ryan Panetta was on the show, and he said that he got a bunch of money, right? Lenders.
Yep.
From TikTok.
Yep.
So, are you getting any private money from TikTok?
I haven't got it through TikTok, but I've got it through Instagram, and they may have came from TikTok.
Yeah.
But I've raised money from social media. I've bought deals from social media. I've sold deals from social media. I've coached people from social media. I've became friends with people from social media. Yeah. Like, it's nonstop.
So... raise money through Instagram. Let's mm-hmm. talk about that story.
So I had a deal completely funded, private money. It was the first position. I think it was like 100 in the first and 40 grand in the second position to fund a deal. And the next day it was closing. And the person in $40,000 called. It was a longtime lender. I think a deal went sideways or something. And they didn't end up getting paid off. They called me like 7 p.m. the night before. I'm like, you couldn't give me like another day or two? He's like, hey, man, like I didn't even want to make this call. That's why it's so late. But I can't do the deal. I was like, what? He was like, I can't do it. I was like, it's cool. I'll handle it. And like, I could have called other lenders because like we've built that, you know, those relationships. But mm-hmm. I was like, let me try Instagram out. So I posted on Instagram. I was like, yo, I need a $40,000 loan. I'm presenting an opportunity for a $40,000 loan. You know, if you're interested, hit me up. A bunch of people hit me up, got on a call with a lady and never met in person before, never private messaged them before, nothing. got on the phone and I was like, hey, like, you know, where you at? What do you do? Blah, blah, blah. Well, here's the opportunity. I just want to be transparent with you. It is a second lien position, which is harder to raise money for. And I need it in the next 12 hours. And we obviously the conversation was longer than that. But at the end of the conversation, she was like, it's crazy that like this is our first time talking and I'm getting ready to wire you $40,000-$50,000. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I know you personally from following you on social media for the last 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'll send the wire tomorrow morning.
It's crazy. Like the relationships, the connections that you have.
Yep.
Because people watch you. And I think it's rightfully so.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of crazy to me.
It's my, like people ask to like take pictures with me or I'm walking around. They're like, you're that TikTok guy. Yeah. And it's still very surreal to me right now.
I'm still waiting for that moment.
It's happened like twice to me, so.
Yeah, I've seen it, you know, again, hanging out with Kong. And like a couple of times, like, hey, you're that guy. Yep. You know, I was like, wow, this is a real thing. Like, this actually happens.
100%. But it's, people always ask like, well, what do you post, right? Mm-hmm. People that follow you want to just see everything about you. They want to see what time you wake up. They want to see what you eat for breakfast. They want to see where you work out. They want to see you going through your emails and closing deals. They want to see you getting on the phone. They want to see you driving to your car. They want to see everything. Mm-hmm. So something that I learned like early on with social media, like what do I post? You document, you don't create. Mm-hmm. So you document what you're already doing in your day-to-day life. You don't have to go out there and get crazy and start creating. Eventually you'll get to that, but to start, you just document it. You literally just post what you're already doing.
Yeah. It's really simple, but we still overcomplicate
it. For sure.
So how are you finding deals right now?
At the beginning, it was just direct mail. Mm-hmm. And then it got RVM, cold call, and SMS, and direct mail. Always done direct mail. Now, like, really the best leads is cold calling and some direct mail. I've done that for 7 years. I've never stopped. We still get deals from it. The response rate has gone down for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that's going to go back up soon.
I agree, because people are going away from it now that everyone's
Well, I think people are going to I think texting is going away.
Agreed. And cold calling. Yeah. I think those response rates are dropping right now.
Yeah.
But right now, we're getting a ton of deals from social media. Yeah. Just you know, from other wholesalers messaging me in our city and around the country. Mm-hmm. It's like, yo, you buying Columbus? Yep. Yo, you buying Ohio? Yep.
Yeah.
You know, there's like four big markets in Ohio, and then we have buyers in all the markets. So I just funnel them to my team, and, you know, a lot of them we buy, and other ones we help, you know, co-wholesale.
What are the markets you guys are buying in?
So we only buy in Columbus, Ohio, mm-hmm. But we do deals in Cincinnati, Cleveland, and like the Dayton area. And Columbus, obviously.
And so it's interesting because, like, you know, a lot of people have said the culture in Phoenix is really cool. It's a lot of collaboration, right? We got Carlos, Sal,
yep.
Alex. We got the guys at Batch. We got Pace, Jamil.
A lot of them.
Brent Daniels, right? But we all collaborate. We're all friends with all one another. And everyone looks at us like we're weird.
Yeah.
You know? But then there's you and Tiffany and Jerry. Yep. And I don't know how much you work with Tim Brotz, but, like, you guys are all friendly to one another as well.
Yeah.
It's not like there's beef in there either.
100%.
So talk to me about collaborating up in Ohio.
Yeah. So when I started, I was the guy that like wanted the, like everything. Mm-hmm. I wanted 100% of my little grape, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to tell people like how to market. I didn't want to tell people like how to talk to sellers. I didn't want to tell people like any of those things, because if the secret got out, like my business would be done, mm-hmm. right? And finally, again, mentors have been huge in my life, you know, talking about having 100% of grape or 20% of a huge watermelon. And the cool thing is you meet better friends, you know, you have real relationships with people, you make more money, mm-hmm. you do cooler stuff. You're not just doing like little $50,000 houses, you're doing like apartment buildings and new construction and other types of stuff. So collaboration has been huge for me. You know, there's still people that we cross by that is like 100% me, mm-hmm. and they don't want to collab, which is fine. But I just like my niche is not your everybody else's niche. You know, if I get a, you know, 200 unit apartment deal, I'm calling Tim Bratz, mm-hmm. right? If I get a new construction house in Columbus now, we're not doing it anymore. I know who I'm calling.
Right.
So collaboration has been huge. You know, it's I've made more money with less headache and less time from JVing with people.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is collaborating is like you guys can compare notes.
Yeah.
Like it's just really quick. Like, hey, this stopped working for me. Did this stop working for you too? Yep. Yeah, exactly.
It's very, very quick market research.
It's so impactful. And the thing is, like, the people that will collaborate with you are bigger thinkers.
Yeah.
Right? And there are people in town that we don't collaborate with, which is fine, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel in some way, like, you know, bad for them because they'll never get better.
Yep.
Right? Like, they'll do well. Like, they're doing great. Like, having great business, whatever. But they'll always be that.
That's it.
For the rest of their career.
Yep. They're stuck. They'll never get out of it. Like, I think one of the people are like, oh, I've been, you know, wholesaling houses for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want that. Like, 10 years from now, like, I don't want to be doing the same thing I've been doing.
Yeah.
Right? But that's how people get stuck. You know, that there's an identity problem. Mm-hmm. You know, they think that real estate or wholesaling or flipping houses is them. And, like, they're worried about what other people think about them.
Right.
But, you know, I don't want that. I want to keep going. You know, I love talking to people, networking with people, learning what it's working, what's not working, and continuous growth.
Yeah. Get better. Grow. And, you know, I've given permission to multiple people in my office. You know, got our brokerage here. I've said to them, if you ever see me in a continuing education class, which you need, right, to keep your license going,
yep,
and my hair is all white, you have permission to shoot me dead, right?
Yep.
Because that means I failed. Yeah. Like, I was not growing.
Yeah.
So.
No, right. Growth is huge. But I think there's a real identity problem with some people. They think that what they do is them, mm-hmm, and they can't change.
Right. I'm a wholesaler.
Yeah.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you there. It's huge that if you are your profession, and it's not that there's anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. I think it just limits what your options are.
Agreed.
So Corey Guzman says, SoFlo is the next Guru Capital. What's interesting is it was the Guru Capital.
Really?
Tampa was the Guru Capital is what my understanding was.
Okay.
And then Phoenix kind of took that mantle, I think, with Sean Terry leading that drive. But it's looking like there might be, you know, between Tampa and Phoenix, we might be going back and forth.
Yeah.
What part of Florida are you going to?
Fort Lauderdale. Yep. Yeah. So flow.
All right. So Adrian Chalice, I'm probably butchering the name, struggling right now to develop the right strategy to scale out the rental portfolio. Currently has one rental and one working full-time job. What recommendation would you give somebody who's trying to build a rental portfolio that's got a full-time job?
I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go around doing it. You can do the traditional buy and turnkey, put 20-25% as a down payment on it. That's by far the least amount of time that you'll have involved into it, but you're going to have the most money put into it as well. Mm-hmm. So if you have an income where you're generating solid income, you know, do that. Buy a $100,000 fully renovated property with tenants in place, paying $1,000 a month, put 20% down and make, you know, $300 a month. It's a great thing if you already have other money coming in. Mm-hmm. But like, if you don't have money, then you got to do the Burr method. You got to find deals yourself or buy from wholesalers. A lot of our rentals, we still buy from wholesalers. People don't think like there's still margin left on them. Like, we're still getting in the 75 cents on the dollar and refining out with no money out of pocket. So those deals are still there. So, you know, either learn how to market, which if you have a full-time job, you probably don't know how, or just network with wholesalers, buy deals from wholesalers, use private money to fund them, renovate them, rent them, refinance, and repeat the process.
Yep. And I think that's one of the places where some people get lost, where, you know, we got our show, so maybe we're part of the problem, is that they have this idea, like, I need to quit my job wholesale to buy rentals.
Yep.
You can just jump right in the rentals.
Yeah.
You know, like, I quit my job at Intel, you know, to get into real estate and kind of this thing where a lot took my eye off the ball, right? But I could have just kept my job and buy rental properties. I could have just done that. But I went this thing where I should become a real estate agent, you know, and I got a wholesale to build my rental portfolio. No, like, if you got a good job, Adrian, you can just buy rentals.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
And then a couple of guys are saying that Burr is the ultimate investment. Guys, you guys have any questions, please ask here. All right. So Ray wants to know, do you worry about advertising for lenders? I guess this probably goes into maybe, you know, SEC concerns.
Yeah.
So do you do anything to protect yourself in that regard?
Yeah. So I don't like advertise. I don't say like, hey, I got this deal for $100,000. I'm paying you 10% interest. There's some exact line of what you can't do. I think it's offering a specific interest rate. You can't like offer a security or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I've never done that, but I've always showcased deals to spark conversation. Mm-hmm. So I'll do like a case study. I'll be like, hey, you know, I bought this house for 50, put 50 into it, sold it for 150. I made $30,000. My lender, without any work of his own, just by writing a check, made $10,000 in interest. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm still saying like, hey, I'm raising private money, without saying, hey, I'm raising private money at 10%.
Right.
Because they look at it and they're like, he made 10 grand without doing any work? Like, I'm confused. And then somebody's going to message you like, how'd the lender make money? Now your foot's in the door to have that conversation. So, you know, I've raised like over $20 million to fund all my deals, the everything, the flips, the new builds, the rentals, everything. And what I always say, people always ask me like, where's money at? First of all, money's everywhere. Literally anybody you meet.
You see that right now. It's literally everywhere.
Literally. but anybody you meet can become a private money lender. Yeah. And the next question is like, well, how do I like talk to them? Mm-hmm. And what I always say, like when I'm out, like me and my girlfriend go out to dinner and she wants to like sit at a table and like have a date. And we do those sometimes. But I always go to the bar. Because like I want to be next to people, especially before COVID, it was a lot easier. But even today, we still do it. I talk to the bartender. I talk to people to my left. Talk to people to my right. I go to car shows. I go to country clubs. I go to places where money is at. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, the conversation always leads to like, well, what do you do? And if I ask you, what do? You know, I'm in real estate. People ask me when people usually ask me way back, I'd say I'm in real estate. And they're like, oh, cool. And just walk away.
Yeah, it's boring.
Exactly. So now when people ask me, what do I do? It depends who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm talking to a young kid and they see the Rolls Royce pull up, I don't say like, I'm in real estate. I say like, I actually teach other people how to buy this car. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you do that?
Right.
I
got it's a Wolf of Wall Street moment.
Exactly. But like when I'm trying to raise private money, they're like, well, what do you do? So actually I teach other people how to invest their money into real estate and possibly earn double digit returns. Mm-hmm. How do you teach those people? And now your foot's in the door.
Yeah.
So there's a whole nother conversation after that, but you just have to get the conversation started and get the interest peaked. And then, you know, you can pitch them a deal that you have or an upcoming deal that you have, tell them about private money, how they can earn money on, you know, retirement accounts, bank accounts, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you just got to start the conversation.
Well, and I think it's awesome that you're intentional with it, right? Because I actually had one of my past clients, he was telling me like, you know, he's in the car club. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, you should be in the car club. I was like, I mean, there's gonna be a lot of money there. Yeah, let's go to this car club.
Yep.
Right. And so I guess it's invite only or something, so it's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
All right, so the message here when you're talking to what you do is you cater your answer to what's probably going on inside their head.
100%.
Right. And that's 100%. The key to marketing, effective marketing, and sales, is figure out what the other person wants. And see if you have that you can give it to them. So if the kid's asking you, what do you do?
Yep.
He probably wants a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And someone's got a lot of money, they want to make more money.
Absolutely. Yeah. Passively.
Yeah. So that's brilliant that you cater your message. I love that.
Another thing on the private money tip, a lot of the money that I've been able to get has been because I've taught them how to raise their own money, you know, whether that's a home equity line of credit or rolling their retirement accounts to self-directed retirement accounts or tapping into a cash value life insurance policy. So if you understand like how people can get access to, you can ask better questions and get the real answers and then teach them how to make money. Like my parents, they got a home equity line of credit. I think they pay like 4% or something and they lend it out at like 12.
Right.
So they're making 8% on money that's not even theirs. Mm-hmm. They have a cash value life insurance policy as well. They pay like 4 or 5% to themselves and then they lend it out at 12%.
Right.
Right. So teaching people how to get access, you know, it puts more private money in your pocket at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think that's something that maybe is not talked about enough is actually understanding money to a certain degree. And if you can understand it, you can coach someone through it.
Yep.
Then you're not just a borrower.
Yeah.
You're a resource.
Yep. 100%.
So I think that's huge.
I've literally got goosebumps just saying this, but I've literally gotten text messages like, I just retired 2 years early. Thank you. Like that's the most rewarding thing like I can do, right?
Yeah.
You can help me make money and I can help you live a better life than you ever dreamed of. Like,
yeah,
it's a win-win.
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely rewarding. Let's see. He also, Ray wants to know, do you do creative deals?
I'm doing my first, what's it called? First subject to like next week. I've never done one. I've always just bought it with cash or private money.
Yeah. So this was the follow-up question. This is from Luis, is why Burr when you can do subject to or seller finance?
So the thing with like, people always love like the idea of subject to, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, whoa, when they send it to us to buy, we're like, you know, this doesn't work. Oh, what if I get a subject to you? The only difference between buying it with private money and buying it subject to is you're saving the interest on the balance of the loan. So if it's like a $100,000 loan, you still got to make the mortgage payments. So you're really only saving a couple percent in interest. The only way for us that it makes sense to buy it subject to, if you have access to a lot of private money, is if it's like almost turnkey and it's going to be very little money out of pocket. Because like, let's say you buy a deal subject to, but you got to pay the seller 20 grand to walk away. and you got to put $30,000 into the rehab. Mm-hmm. Now this great subject two deal, you got $50,000 into it of your own money.
Which is, you could just gotten the private money somewhere else.
Exactly. You could have bought two turnkey deals for that.
Yeah.
So we've just haven't had that many opportunities that actually make sense. But this deal that we're buying, we're picking it up. It's going to be like $5,000 in rehab, subject to the existing mortgage. And we're going to keep it as a rental property because it's only $5,000 out of pocket for a great rental property.
Yeah. So Jeremy Mathis says that you're the GOAT.
What's up, Jeremy?
And he wants to know, how do you teach your team to analyze deals for you?
Yeah. One of the questions I got very early on from a sales team was like, well, how should I analyze this deal? If the deal makes sense, we can make money from it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to analyze it as just a rental property or just a flip or just a wholesale. If the deal makes sense, you can make money on it. So what I always tell them, like, we kind of use two ways to analyze it. The super, super quick way is like, look at what other cash sales are selling for in the area and just get it beneath that. That's like the easiest way you can go.
Yeah.
But that's not always like, the data is not always that clear. So we just have a spreadsheet where we put in the ARV, the rehab budget, and then it spits out the price for us.
Yeah.
And then give or take, that's generally where we need to be. And then if it's close, you do further research, you finalize the numbers. But if you need to be, like, off of that, if you need to be at 100 and they're at like 200, like, you just move on to the next one.
Okay.
But if you need to be at 100, they're at like 110, 120, 130. Usually there's a way to make that deal work.
Got it. Is this in your blueprint?
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. Very cool. You want to talk about your blueprint?
Yeah. You know, it's an online course teaching people how to get started in real estate. Basically, like, somebody brand new or somebody that's done a couple deals that still wants the guidance of how to grow. So it teaches wholesaling, marketing, sales and negotiation, raising private money, flipping houses, managing contractors, and buying rental properties. So it's the blueprint of real estate.
It's a lot. All right. So Adrian was saying, I think many people like myself get stuck in seeing the big real estate investors and feel as if we don't have as many rental properties as they do when we're not making or doing it right. So I guess might be a little of keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
Potentially.
100%. Again, like, are you building a business that you want? Mm-hmm. Are you scaling chaos? Are you chasing something that you don't actually want? Because I know a lot of people that have great businesses and they show like the gross profit numbers, but the net is the same as it was if they had one person.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, do you want that extra headache to look good on mm-hmm. social media? You know, social media, you can get caught up forever trying to chase somebody, because mm-hmm. on social, you only see the 1% of mm-hmm. their perfect life.
Right.
You know, everybody goes through struggle. You know, I go through struggles. Mm-hmm. I lose money on deals. You know, I try to show that on social to be real with people, but people get way too caught up in keeping up with the Joneses.
I was laughing at your video of your tripod falling over.
I was doing my dance and it fell. I was like, oh, I'm going to post this anyways.
Yeah, it's real life.
For sure.
Okay, so how do you set it up where how do you set it up so that you're not the one looking for deals anymore?
You got to have a team. You know, it's that simple. If you want to not be a solopreneur and not be the guy in the meetings that has to go in and out of the rooms mm-hmm. to pick up phone calls, you got to hire a team. You know, usually it starts with like a lead, like manager. It starts with a cold caller. So you get off the phone, the front end of the phones. Then it's usually like a lead manager or warmer upper to hand them off to you. And then ideally that person learns enough where they just start closing the deals themselves.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things too is, you know, it's hard for this. You learn this as you get older,
mm-hmm.
is you have to give people permission to fail.
100%.
You know, like every time someone makes a mistake, like you lose it, then they're going to be terrified and like they'll screw something up and they won't even tell you. It's like the, if you're dinging the tenant for every repair and then they don't tell you about the repair and now you've got crazy mold damage, right?
100%.
You got to give people permission to fail.
100%. That was a struggle for me because like I was the one that wanted to know about every penny of every mm-hmm. deal, of every detail, of everything. And I was just like on people. But like people have told me decisions I know we're losing money, but I let them do the decision anyways.
Yeah. You have to. It's hard.
And I'm not going to let them lose $100,000. But like if they make a decision and we got to lose a $200 earnest money deposit, like I'm going to eat that so they can learn that lesson.
Right. So, as long as we're learning.
Agreed.
Travis Copeland wants to know, how does he get on your mastermind yacht or mastermind on the yacht?
What's up, Travis? I'll see you in Cabo in June.
And Jeremy wants to play one-on-one.
He don't want that smoke.
What did you play?
I was point guard, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're pretty tall, so. Yeah.
Got buckets. You can do it anytime, Jeremy.
Yeah, well, I'm going to want in on this. So what does your team look like currently?
So sales team, one salesperson, disposition slash project manager. So they dispo it if we wholesale it, which we don't often. Mm-hmm. And then they run the contractors, whether it's a flip or a rental property. And then like a TC assistant, transaction coordinator assistant. And then like we have property management company that manages all the rental properties.
So you're back to self-managing.
The rentals?
Yeah.
No, we got property management that does them.
So you have a property management company that you use?
Yes, correct.
Okay,
I thought
you were saying that you own it.
No. Yeah. I thought about building it, and I talked to some people, and they're like, don't do it.
No, if you're going to do it, you have to go huge.
Yeah.
You can't do it small.
Agreed. And then we just started putting some Airbnbs in play, mm-hmm. Which I love. We got two. We're doing a third one, and I got like 20 doors in one neighborhood that's like booming right now, so we're going to transition all of them over. I'm still learning it, but putting like the autoresponder systems in place and then just have like my assistant help with like, you know, the variables in place.
Who is the target audience that's going to Columbus for Airbnb?
It's a great question. And that's why I didn't do it for a long time because I didn't think there was a market for it. But there's a lot of like weddings and stuff that still happen where, you know, families coming in. What I found is the bigger houses that don't really make sense is like just rental properties because like they're just so large and they cost too much. Actually turn out to be great Airbnbs. So you know, I'm rehabbing a property now that would never work as a rental property, but I own a house six houses down in Airbnb currently, and it's booming, so I'm gonna do the same thing. But families, weddings, we have a big convention center. A lot of conventions are held there for like gymnastics, the Arnold, you know, the big Arnold Schwarzenegger, his events in Columbus.
Oh, that's right,
you can charge crazy prices.
How far is Canton?
Canton,
yeah,
I think it's like 2 hours, 2.5.
But like we go Ohio, I think that's where I would want to go visit.
Yeah, right. They have the Hall of Fame's there, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, they're great. We love them.
All right. So Ben wants to know if you could have coffee with someone dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm gonna have to think on that one. I mean, like, I want to get to know people that understand business. Like, I don't care about like sitting down with like a NBA player or something like that. Like, I want somebody that like thinks different, like the Jeff Bezos or the Elon Musks, or the Tim Cooks, or you know, somebody that's like been way outside of the box and been wildly successful. I want to know like how they actually like process thoughts, because a lot of people like just think and then just keep it pushing. Other people like kind of think on the thoughts, but like they're on a whole nother level.
I'm with you on Elon. I'm a big Elon fanboy. He's he definitely does not think like other people think.
No, not at all. And I want to know what that's like.
So Adrian says, he definitely has a problem with keeping up with the Joneses. So do I need 70 rentals, or if I'm satisfied with a certain income coming in, and that's okay. And Adrian, look, you are not alone. I actually had this conversation with my wife two nights ago.
Yep.
And she actually asked me the question, like, when is enough enough? You know, like, how much you need to travel? How much you need to do this and that? And I was like, you remember that movie, The Greatest Showman? You know that song, you know, where she sings like, it's never enough. It's like, that's like my theme song.
it's a moving target. I'm still trying to find that answer. Yeah. But something that I did that brought some clarity to that question is think up like what your dream month would be like. Are you living on a yacht? Are you flying a private jet? Are you living in Columbus? Are you living in Turks and Caicos? Are you traveling with your entire family? Are you traveling just with you and your wife? Think about what like your perfect month looks like and then add all that up. And then add like 20-30% on top of that. And then that's the goal now, because that's your perfect lifestyle.
Right.
And the problem is with us, when we get there, we're like, all right, well, I want to own the jet instead of rent the jet.
Yeah.
But like,
I don't want to be some schmuck renting a jet. I want to own the jet. I want to own the island.
Exactly.
Like, was it Richard Branson, right? He owns an island.
Yep. And he owns a lot of stuff.
He owns a lot of things.
But it's like, it's figuring out like what you want your lifestyle to look like, because every level there's a lifestyle adjustment you have to make to it. You know, if you want to make $100,000 a year, you can do that very passively and live, you know, completely comfortable. If you want to make $1 million a year, you know, there's some extra work you're going to have to put in. There's some, you know, late nights you're going to have to put in when things go south. If you want to make $100 million, there's even more things that you got to do. So you just got to ask yourself, like, what do you want your life to look like, and then adjust the income to fit that lifestyle.
And what price are you willing to pay?
Agreed. 100%.
All right. So, Travis wants to know, how much Dogecoin are you holding?
Zero right now. But
and then, hodling. I don't even know what HODL is.
Hodl, hold and never sell, or something like that.
I got to learn this whole other crypto world.
I love crypto,
which is also, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. So then how much do you own in crypto, if you don't mind? answer that question.
Seven figures into it.
There you go. So are you using Prep? We already talked about that. Can you talk about hiring an acquisition person, no salary, so I'm guessing all commission, while only having like a two-man team? How do you get them to take over the job over other opportunities that offer base pay?
Yeah, so getting somebody to start 100% just commission is definitely going to be difficult unless they came from 100% sales job already. So that's usually like if you're hiring a killer that knows how to sell, that's producing maybe in car sales or something, you know, you may be able to get them to come in 100% commission if you can prove to them that you're actually producing the amount of leads you need to produce. But if you're not, or if the people's newer, you know, starting them as we call it like a junior acquisition, putting them on a small base with a small commission for anything that they bring to the table. And telling them like, hey, you know, my goal, if you want this to be the goal, my goal for you is to learn this game, start closing the deals, and then move you to 100% commission because you'll make more money over there and it's less overhead for us. So getting somebody to come out the gate with no base is going to be difficult, especially because in real estate, you get a deal today. Sometimes it takes 20, 30, 60, 90 days to get paid on it. So it's going to be very difficult for them to wait one, two, 3 months to actually make money.
Yeah, and we tell them right off the bat in the interview, like, just don't expect to get paid for 3 months.
Yeah,
right.
That's a great expectation. To say.
If you can come in here knowing you won't get paid for 3 months, then okay, let's work together. But
yeah,
if you're telling me like you can't hold out 3 months, then this isn't going to work because you can have commission breath.
Yep.
So Solomon says, the goat again. What did your marketing look like when you were doing 10 plus deals a month, 10 plus wholesale deals a month?
Yeah. So we were sending out about 15,000 pieces of direct mail every month. We had 3 full-time cold callers, cold calling all day, every day. I think it was like 1,000 RVMs a day, and then a couple thousand text messages a day. We had PPC going as well. And then we were still buying from wholesalers on top of that. So like I got into the game buying. So like that's always been something that we could do. But the budget was like 25-ish grand a month when it was at its peak.
And then why Rolls Royce?
I love the car. When I was 17 years old, freshman year in high school, I bought a Chrysler 300 because it's like the thing
it
that
looks
resembles
a lot like it. Yeah,
exactly. But it's the only thing I could afford, obviously. So I don't know. I just always loved it. You know, bought the Chrysler, sold it. Always had the dream of the Wraith. Finally was able to do it. And I was like, all right, I got to get the Wraith.
That's awesome. Yeah. Cause I see it every once in a while in the background, on TikTok. All right. So Maurice George wants to know, have you ever done any commercial real estate or, you know, a service hotel, strip mall, something like that?
So I own a 6-unit like office building. So like not like a strip center, a 6-unit office building, an 8-unit apartment building, a 6-unit apartment building, and then the rest doubles and singles. So never like commercial, but like commercial loans on the bigger apartment buildings.
Got it. And then what is your biggest struggle right now?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's like clarity. Like trying to figure out exactly what you want out of life. You know, there's a lot of ways to make money, multiple streams of income, but like, what do you enjoy doing? Cause I've been down the path chasing money and it's cool. It's fun. You make a lot of money doing it, but inevitably that wears out. So you got to really find out like what makes you happy. Like right now, It's building a brand. It's helping people. I get hundreds of messages a day and people thanking me like, yo, I just bought my first house. I've been following you for 6 months. Thanks, man. Yo, I just, you know, retired. You know, we did 100K in wholesale fees, you know, from following your trainings. You know, that's what I get happiness out of now. So it's not really chasing the money for me right now. It's just trying to find out exactly what I want.
It's kind of a crazy answer for a 27-year-old. how do you stay motivated?
The why. Again, at the beginning, it was I wanted the money, right? I wanted the nice things.
Well, we all started.
Let's call a spade a spade. But again, once you start getting that, it changes. So like motivation now, part of the cool thing about posting on social, which you don't realize until you're in it, it holds you accountable as well. It's like you have a whole group of accountability partners.
Everyone knows when I'm not running.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I'll go a day. I went a day without posting. Had a life, a family matter I had to tend to. And people were messaging me like, bro, you okay? Like, what's going on? Like, I didn't see you post yesterday. But you know, they encourage me to keep going. And a little bit of lifestyle. Like, I still want nicer things, so I'm still pushing for money, and helping people right now.
Yeah. What is your superpower?
Hate that. I ask this question too, but it's always a weird answer. I think I'm very conscious of my thoughts. Again, I think a lot of people just run 24/7, 365, and never take a step back to think where they are in life. It's called the thought on the thought. Like, you think something, but like, what's the thought? Why did you think that? How do you solve that problem? You know, I say a lot of times, you cannot control what comes into your mind, but you can control your reaction to that thought. So it's like a thought on a thought. Just being very conscious of that. You know, one thing cool that I do, I journal every time I make a big purchase, and I have a journal just for that. So like, the first thing I bought, the Jaguar, like, all right, what's my thought process? Why do I want this? Am I buying it for me, or am I buying it for other people? You know, is it making me happy? Whatever that is. Then I bought a Rolex, same thing. I bought a bigger crib, same thing. I bought a Wraith, same thing. I bought, you know, I'm moving to Florida, paying a lot more to live there, same thing. And it's cool to see like how that thought process changes over time. You know, what was once a big decision is no longer even a conversation.
It's not on your radar anymore.
Yeah.
Those list of questions, where did those questions come from?
Which ones?
Am I doing this for me? Am I doing this for other people?
Got it. Mentors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. I think that's a huge resource. If that's something that you could share.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think send it to me later. I'll post it in the for show sure. notes. I think that would be great for a lot of people that kind of try to understand their motivation
100%
behind what they're doing.
100%.
I think that's awesome.
Again, most people just do it to chase clout, to keep up with the Joneses. Like the Wraith. Like I wanted the Wraith. It's not an investment. I'm going to lose money. I'm going to lose money on the vehicle. But the cool thing is, when you think about things differently now, how can you get a liability to pay for itself? Mm. You know, that car has paid for itself many times over, from partnerships, from meeting people, from private money, whatever it is. It's very important to think the thought on the thought.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing too is we struggle. We work crazy hours. We take risks.
Big ones.
You know, and we're always looking at like, you know, the return on this, return on that. At some point you have to do something for you.
100%.
At some point you have to just like, okay, I'm getting this.
Yep.
For me.
Yep.
So.
And it's not an investment. Like, I want this because I want this.
No, like, I know I'm throwing money away, right? Yep. This is money going out the window.
Yep.
But I'm doing it for me.
100%.
Yeah, you got to do that. Otherwise, what's the point?
100%.
Of doing everything we're doing.
100%.
What's the greatest lesson you've learned?
I heard this back when I was a teenager, and it was, when you're not working, somebody else is. And there's two ways to take that. When you're not working, somebody else is working to take your spot. Mm-hmm. There's two ways to take that.
Yeah, I saw that on a No Fear t-shirt.
And one way to take that is like, I have to work 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. And that's how I took it at the beginning. And I did work 24/7, 365. Mm-hmm. But I don't work 24/7, 365 now. You work smarter, not harder. You put the right systems in place. You hire the right people, the right processes. You make the highest income producing activity. Like, I can put a product out for $5 and sell 1,000 of them like that. Mm-hmm. But like, is that really worth the time making the product, or is it better time spent, you know, helping people or creating content or whatever it is? So, you know, that's what my best driver is now, is spending time creating content, connecting with people, and actually building relationships from that.
Yeah. Huge. What is your favorite, best, or most interesting failure?
I think my favorite, a couple. So, when the dream of basketball disappeared, like finding myself again, was a big one. And you know, it was a blessing in disguise. They took me away from this opportunity to put me on a platform to make money in real estate and to give back and help other people. So I think that was huge. And then the first time I lost money, it was a horrible experience, but it was a good lesson learned. And then the second time I lost money, I was actually partnering with a friend, and we thought we were going to make like 60 grand or something. And then we underestimated the rehab and overshot the ARV, like how everybody does.
That's what happens.
And we planned on like a 3-month hold time, ended up being like an 18-month hold time.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, went from making 50 to losing like 40. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like 25 or something. And I stressed on it for 18 months. You know, that was still a lot of money to me at the time, right? And I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. And finally, I woke up one day and it wasn't selling. We were trying to figure out what to do with it. Didn't make sense as a rental property. And I picked up the phone and called my buddy. I was like, do you want this house? He's like, well, I mean, I guess I could do an Airbnb on it. I said, bet, I'll write you a check today. Come pick it up. And I ate the whole loss, wrote the check, and just got it out of sight, out of mind. So spend your time on things that grow and make money. Once there's a loss, like, you're losing money. You can't save the deal and get out of it for free.
Just cut it.
Cut it. Cut it and move on.
Yeah. Is there a book that you've given, gifted more than any other?
Think and Grow Rich. I've ordered hundreds of those. I actually keep them in the trunk of my car. So anytime I see like a kid, you know, slinging water bottles on the corner, street corner or something, I try and give them a book as well.
That's awesome. Paying it forward, because you got it when you were young too.
I wish I remembered who gave it to me too. Yeah. I don't, but it's highly recommended.
Hopefully they're watching the podcast.
Agreed.
How do you feel about crypto mining?
Mining? I don't really have an opinion on that, but I love crypto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you love about crypto?
I think it's the future. So a friend of mine, so I put money in back in 2017 when everything took a crap. Luckily, it was only like $500. So, like, you know, I lost like 80% of $500. So I was like, ooh, like, that's not it. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. And then a friend came to me in like October, November, and he's like, I got something. I was like, what is it? Like, what's up? And he's like, crypto. And I was like, why? And he kind of told me why. I went home, I watched like 8 hours of videos on YouTube that night, and I started to truly understand it. We ended up buying Ethereum at like $300, Bitcoin at like $700, I mean $7,000.
I was gonna say $7,000.
Yeah, $7,000. So I was like, proof of concept is there. You know, made a lot of money, started doing a ton more research, and the use cases for some of these cryptos that are coming out, 100% will change the world. And I want to be part of that. To me, it's like finding the Amazon when nobody knew what Amazon was.
But everyone's talking about it.
I think there's like 5 to 10% of the population that's talking about it. We're just
surrounded by
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So it's the entire crypto market cap is $2 trillion. Like, that's not that much money. It was like $400 billion in October, and now it's $2 trillion. So it's 5X'd in 6 months. So I think it's the future.
Nuts. All right. So, last question is from Solomon. Is how did you come up with the term elevate?
So I was thinking about all the different terms like accelerate and elevate and all these things, and everything was taken. I don't know. I just brainstormed, I journaled on it and came up with Elevate Life. It's just like how business, obviously how to make money. But past that, like, how do you become the best, like, father, son, husband, wife, whatever it is to your people, especially like parents? Like, when I have kids, like, I want to be the best dad. I want to be 100% present, all those things. How do you give back and help people and change most people's lives? So just elevating life in all aspects. Most people just talk about business, but like, how do you help all the way around?
Yeah, that's awesome. A lot of thought put into it. All right. So think about anything you want to leave the listeners with.
Okay.
Guys, if you get value, please like, subscribe, share, comment. It helps the algorithms, which means we can get in front of more people and we create 100 millionaires. And then we do have our workshop on May 21st. So if you guys are interested in that, send me a DM. Also, you know, we're offering JV opportunities with the Brewer Method. If you guys are interested in that, check out brewermethod.com. What are the last thoughts you want to leave the listeners with?
For sure. So kind of tying it back to the beginning, you know, some people like that are dedicated will spend that, you know, max out their credit card, but everybody tells them not to, right?
Yeah, we tell them not to.
Agreed.
But we do it.
Agreed. I believe in life, like, people that like want something more from themselves are on the cliff and they're looking over and they see the potential, but they still have some fear or some self-doubt, or they're still listening to some people or whatever it is. Lean into people in your life that are positive and that believe in you. There's always somebody somewhere that's positive and believes in you. Even if there's 99 people are negative, there's that one person that's positive. Because I believe when people are on the edge of the cliff, they need a little push to get going. So I try to do that for people. I encourage everybody, you know, listening, to be that person for someone. Don't, you know, hold people back. Don't tell people how bad of a decision it's going to be. Well, what if this negative thing? What if that negative thing? What if it's the best decision they've ever made in their entire life and you're the one holding them back? So I encourage everybody to encourage others to do that. And it's okay to be at that cliff. Some people just need that push.
Yeah, I love it. And what I always love to tell people is like, look, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
A lot.
For sure. It's not easy.
But it's so worth it.
Yeah.
Life changing. It's incredible.
I've never had anybody that took the leap of faith mm-hmm. come back to me and say, I wish I would have waited longer.
Yeah.
It's always, oh, man, if I knew that, like, I'd have been done it.
Yeah, there's no one that regrets
100%
going for it.
100%.
You're not going to, and even if you did, right, even if you did it and it didn't work out, now you know.
Yep.
There's never this regret in the back of your mind.
100%.
So you're awesome. Peace. Someone wants to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Yeah, so you can find me. Instagram is where I communicate the most. Instagram is at Austin Rutherford Official. I got a YouTube channel, Austin Rutherford, and TikTok, Austin Rutherford as well.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys for watching.